Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival. This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Talk about a wicked wild ride Bitcoin today, Tim.
Yeah, whipsawing. I mean, it was down just north of $30,000 at one point around 9 o'clock this morning, shooting back up to $40,000 just a little later in the day.
Yeah, if you bought at the lows and just kind of rode it up today, not a bad day. Hey, listen, it's something I talked about big time with ARK Invest, Kathy Wood. We're going to hear from her a little bit later on our show at the top of the hour. Meantime, looking at the crypto markets always for us, Mike McClone, commodity strategist at Bloomberg Intelligence, sitting right next to me in our Interactive Brokers studio. Where do we begin? How do we tell this story in a smart way?
Well, your interview with Kathy nailed it. I thought, stoic, this is a big picture theme. Let the traders beat themselves up. And this is what's happening. They're hitting stops, the speculators. And that's one lesson I learned in Trading Pits. I'm doing my mini violin right now. There's just no, you know, hey, this is what happens. You hit the stops, you flush out the speculators, and you create great levels. And I think that's what happened. Sure, Bitcoin got a little bit too expensive. And I think the thing we're going to look at from the future is Dogecoin marked the peak in all the froth in markets. And now we're getting back to good support in Bitcoin. But let's look forward fundamentally.
Right.
To me, this is a really building the blocks for fundamental support in Bitcoin, i.e. what's happening? We're seeing every asset today is down exceptional one, gold. And why? Because it got too cheap. And what I think is happening now is the market's looking forward. Is this finally a sign of froth coming out of the stock market? And if that's the case, that means much more Federal Reserve easing, much more stimulus, which supports gold and Bitcoin and bonds. And I think that's market's going to be looking forward to.
Mike, how do you explain just the massive drop that we saw this morning? There were two of them. One happened during the 7 o'clock hour and one happened going into the 9 o'clock hour Wall Street time. I mean, is it realistic to think that that could have been some sort of whale offloading positions?
Oh, sure. Well, it's called hitting stops. And as far as who's doing it, I try not to go there because in my whole career, I've noticed people trying to beat themselves up and figuring out exactly what it is. And by the time you figure it out, it's too late. So I fully expect it was just the massive, the overweighted longs getting hitting stops. As far as a whale, most I sense from these whales is they don't really care. They don't sell. They don't buy. They just hold. Mm. And that's the big picture. So people usually claim there's just too few wallets, but a lot of times these are exchanges holding wallet for all their customers. And
right,
they're trading around.
One criticism of Bitcoin has been it's very highly concentrated among a small number of people.
Less so than you hear. That hits the tape and it gets readership and people like to hear it. But the fact is one exchange might have one wallet with hundreds and maybe thousands of customers in that one wallet. So it's different. One exchange could be one, and there are tons of people trading in and out. So that's, I think, less important. And then the biggest wallet in the world is Satoshi Nakamoto, or the so-called pseudonym. And he has 1 million coins. that we understand that are, have never traded. So that would be something to look forward to. But a lot of times what I see in this is a good way to create demand in the market is reduce prices. And that's what I think we just did. We tested that. We got to near 30. 30 is about where we ended last year. And I think this quick bounce today is going to bring out, okay, is this the global digital reserve asset in the world going digital? I think the market is going to say, yes, it is. What's my risk of not holding versus it doing more of the same? And by the way, we've seen these kind of things for 10 years. It's, you know, it's keep surviving the 1,000 cuts. This is just another cut.
What about what we got from China this morning, kind of pushing back on global currencies? Dude, yeah. What's the role of that?
It's part of the new Cold War, I think, is brewing. First of all, it's not
between
really,
the U.S. and China,
yes,
or China and the world?
Completely. And what's right in the center of that? Digital reserve assets. So I'll start with the fact. The digitalization of money is enhancing dollar dominance on the world scale. Mm-hmm. That is driving China nuts because they hate the dollar. And also, now we have an authoritarian dictatorial economy that is not, you know, driven by market forces. They can't catch up. That's why they have to steal intellectual property. But the news isn't really new. It just tweaked what, you know, was market was ready to hit stops. And a key thing to remember in this space, if the U.S. does nothing, the most widely traded cryptocurrency on the planet is Tether. It's double the volume today mm-hmm. of Bitcoin. That's a digital dollar, which trades on Ethereum platform, which enhances the value of Ethereum. And that's what's happening. If the U.S. does nothing, by the way, the toothpaste is already out of the bottle in the U.S. We're not going to cramp down like China, but China has to, because they need to prevent their citizens from getting access to the internet and getting access to outside of their currency. They have to. Versus the U.S., we're a free company, country. So to me, this is part of that Cold War kicking in, and the U.S. is already winning.
Still a commodity?
Oh, no. I look at...
Are you changing? Because you've called it a commodity, right?
Bitcoin?
Yeah.
No, I look at Bitcoin as a collectible.
Oh, a collectible.
Yes,
okay,
it's a collectible.
Still a collectible.
Yeah, it's... Oh, yes, clearly. So that's a key difference about Bitcoin and every other asset. The rules of economics still favor Bitcoin. It is, you know, demand is still increasing and the supply is clearly declining by code. That is incorruptible. There's not much you can do about that. Now, that's a key difference with the whole broad space, which I'll be published on tomorrow. The amount of coins on CoinMarketCap.com is approaching 10,000.
That's a lot.
That might have hit the number of excess froth in space. You know, unlimited supply, ease of entry. Okay, an index, Bloomberg Galaxy Crypto Index, will have a survivor bias.
Right.
But Bitcoin is the one that's outside of space. It represents the macro, digital gold, and everything else are just speculative.
10 seconds. Are we all going to be dealing in some kind of cryptocurrency at some point in our life?
Absolutely. Unless you can't expect that trend to stop, it's probably going to accelerate.
And if we invest in Tesla or some other companies, we're already in it, right?
Tesla's down on the year, Bitcoin's up on the year.
Ah, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks
really
for having me.
Really appreciate it. Mike McClone, commodity strategist at Bloomberg Intelligence, Inner Interactive Broker Studio, right?
He's the guy to have.
I'm done.
That's it. We know everything about Bitcoin now.
We can go home now. This is Bloomberg. I want to talk a little bit about the virus, because New York State, which we know was the original U.S. epicenter of the pandemic, reporting, Tim, its lowest infection rates in September. But in India, daily deaths reached a record. They did, though, report new infections declining from the highs of early May. That's good to hear, but they still have a long way to go.
Yeah, different stories playing out around the world. Keeping track globally, cases have passed 164.2 million. Deaths have exceeded 3.4 million.
More than 1.51 billion doses have been given of the COVID vaccine. So let's get into it with Dr. Mario Ramirez, an emergency medicine doctor and entrepreneur, managing director at the nonprofit Opportunity Labs. They are building opportunities for children. He, by the way, was the pandemic and emerging threats coordinator at Health and Human Services during the Obama administration. Dr. Ramirez, on the phone from Washington, D.C. Nice to have you here with us. What do you think is the COVID or vaccine headline that we all need to be paying attention to right now?
Well, so I think there's two things, Carol. Thanks for having me, by the way.
Sure, thank you.
So the first, you know, that you mentioned at the top of the hour is that, you know, the pandemic here in the United States is certainly at a different place than the rest of the world, where the situation is still very tenuous. But I think the top line here domestically is that while overall things are going quite well, there is a lot of heterogeneity in the information. So we just got some important information from Johns Hopkins, and we're actually seeing a lot of variability in how the vaccine is rolling out. And because of that, we're actually seeing pretty impressive differences in coronavirus case counts in those areas. So, for example, we have 7 states where vaccination rates are greater than 70% of the population, and case counts are 10% less compared to the national average in those states. But in 10 states where vaccination rates are less than 50% of the population, their counts are 20% higher than the average. And so what we're starting to see really is increased fragmentation that really brings home the point of how important it is that we try to access those people who are really hesitant about getting vaccinated.
To what extent do you think that opening up and telling those people who have been vaccinated that they don't have to wear masks and they can go back to life as normal before the pandemic, to what extent do you think that actually helps get hesitant people to get vaccinated?
So my hope is that it is helpful. You know, of course, and many people have talked about this, is that we do not have a good verification mechanism. You know, we certainly know from game theory and lots of real world examples is that when you don't have a way to verify, you know, someone's story, that people have a tendency to cheat, which is what my, you know, big concern is. Certainly, I think if we continue to see regional fragmentation of cases, that will create a larger incentive for people to get vaccinated. But the other thing that I think has a key role here is that as we start to open more businesses up and, you know, more entertainment venues, there becomes, I think, a greater need for testing. And this is something that, you know, I've advocated for as we start to reopen, particularly on the part of, you know, employers. And groups like the We Act Alliance have stressed the importance that as we start to reopen these places up, testing and surveillance becomes that much more important so that we can have a good handle on how these vaccinations are working in the real world.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting as we make progress, and I was just talking with a colleague, you know, it feels good. And we know that if you've got the vaccine, if you do even still get COVID, you're in a much better position than if you didn't have the vaccine. But yet we're still learning a lot. Is that fair to say?
I think that's true. I mean, the CDC certainly felt comfortable, you know, with the data that they've seen so far, that these vaccines are working well in the real world. But the other piece of that, right, is that we continue to collect information and we continue to learn. And one of the big pieces that I think we still need to learn is how long lasting or how durable the vaccines are, right? And so I think today we've heard Dr. Fauci say that, you know, he believes a booster is going to be necessary within about 12 months after your first dose. That's something that we still need to learn a lot more about. And I think, you know, again, that stresses the point of continuing to test. And testing rates, of course, have fallen off. But as we get into the fall and the winter again, and we start to get a sense for when that durability is falling off, testing is going to be that much more important.
Very briefly, is there any indication that variants that have developed around the world can break through these vaccines? 20 seconds.
So far, not so much. We have seen good efficacy of the Pfizer vaccine in particular, and similar reporting from Moderna against all of the variants that we're tracking, both in Brazil, South Africa, and India as well.
Still with us is Dr. Mario Ramirez, emergency physician, managing director at Opportunity Labs, former pandemic and emerging threats coordinator at HHS during the Obama administration. Still with us on the phone from Washington. I'm rushing because I want to get to you because one of the things we want to ask you is a headline crossed about no masks for vaccinated Amazon staff. That's going to, I think, go into effect
next week.
We at our office don't have to wear masks. And increasingly, we're seeing that. Dr. Ramirez, are you comfortable with that as people kind of go back to quote unquote normal and take off the mask? Is it okay?
Well, so I'll say, like a lot of people, the CDC recommendations caught me a little bit off guard, you know, and I did think that masks were going to be the last thing to come down. But I have read the data that drove the CDC's recommendations, and I think the science is certainly sound. You know, the science certainly suggests that these vaccines have good efficacy against the different variants that are out there circulating, and we're continuing to see improvement across all of the metrics. And so I think, you know, again, the point of wearing masks and distancing was to get us to a place where we could adequately take care of patients. And I think we have approached that point. And so it's time to give folks a chance to see that real life is coming back. And so I think it's appropriate to give this a try.
Yeah, and we only have about 30 seconds left, but there's still so many people who don't necessarily feel comfortable with that, doctor, even if they have been vaccinated.
Sure. And I think that's okay. You know, like all things in this pandemic, it is a learning process. And I think it's important for people to observe what happens with the case counts as more and more people take off their masks and develop their own sense of comfort. For the last year and a half, we've been stressing to people how important it is to wear masks and how important it is to make sure you're staying distant. And so I think we just need to give people space to feel comfortable taking down their masks when they think it's appropriate. I certainly don't think it harms anyone to wear a mask. And so I think if it takes a little while longer for some people to get comfortable with that, that's okay.
Listen, thank you so much for your time. We look forward to catching up with you again in the future. Dr. Mario Ramirez, emergency doctor, managing director at Opportunity Labs, joining us on the phone from Washington, D.C. So we've been talking all week long about the how-to issue of Bloomberg Businessweek. It is out. There's so many varied and informative pieces of advice in the magazine, so I highly recommend you check it out. But there's another story we wanted to bring to your attention in the new issue. It is this week's remarks, Tim. It's about how China is winning the race to vaccinate the world, at least for now.
Yeah, joining us now in the studio is Joel Weber, editor of Bloomberg Business Week. And joining us on the phone is John Lauerman, editor at Bloomberg. The editor of this piece, China is winning the race to vaccinate the world. Joel, what is the opportunity that China has to use so-called soft power when it comes to vaccinating the developing world?
That is a really interesting term to use because this is ultimately a diplomatic weapon of sorts, or tool, let's call it, of who gets whose vaccine. And COVAX is sort of the West version of a distribution mechanism that can get vaccines out in the world. And we're not talking about the Americas, United States of America, so much as Africa, South America, Southeast Asia, a lot of places that don't have the science or resources to get their own version of it. And what we're now seeing is that the Chinese vaccines are basically a huge export tool. And they are flooding the zone and basically being an alternative to what U.S. soft power looks like. So John, how is that beginning to play out around the world now that the WHO has given a stamp for one of the two Chinese vaccines?
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me. So, I think we're still in the very early stages of this. You know, this is maybe round one or round one and a half of a battle or of a play that's going to take quite some time to play out. You know, China has shipped out 256 million doses of vaccine to other countries. Now the U.S. has committed to ship 80 million so far, and I don't know whether they've actually, you know, made any of those donations yet. So China has, at the same time that they're doing this, they are extracting some diplomatic concessions from the countries that they're going to. Now, the interesting thing about the WHO's clearance of the Sinopharm vaccine, one of the two government underwritten vaccines from China, is that that vaccine is
I think there are a lot of wild cards here, John. And one element that really struck me with this was really two things. One, the way that that it's described as, you know, we don't even know how efficacious the vaccine is, especially in the long run. But then also this kind of vaccine diplomacy is, quote, clearly of the hardball variety. Take me through what that means.
Well, so as I said, they're extracting concessions from these countries at the same time. They warned Bangladesh and some other countries after they made vaccine deals with China not to engage with the U.S., not to engage with other countries that were offering vaccine. So they've also coaxed countries to express or encouraged them to express support for the One China, for the, you know, the not recognizing Taiwan. So they've made moves like this.
So it's fair to say strings are attached.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, there are definitely strings attached.
It reminds me of, you know, all the moves that China has done in helping infrastructure in the emerging parts of the world, right?
Yeah, and as the Belt and Road Initiative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then also having access
to
commodities, right? Like developing these relationships and basically making these emerging economies and countries beholden to China specifically. India, John, has got to be watching very closely. I mean, India is the place where so many pharmaceuticals are manufactured.
Yeah, and of course, India isn't exporting vaccine right now.
Right,
India wasn't really making it any, you know, this was not a diplomatic tool for them at all. I think, you know, perhaps it may have created some favor for them to export vaccines, but these were not their own vaccines. Now, these happen to be China's own vaccines. They're, you know, domestically produced, domestically developed. So, these are the vaccines from India. There was one domestically developed vaccine, but the other was from AstraZeneca. So that's where all that technology came from and was by far the more favored vaccine. But in any case, I think we're going to have to be, you know, keeping a very close eye on India. Now it looks like we won't be seeing a vaccine being exported from India until the end of the year. And India is one of the major sources of vaccine for lower middle income countries.
You know, the other thing, John, that I think a lot of people are trying to understand, there's been all this conflicting information about how efficacious the Chinese vaccines are. How are you making sense of that, especially in light of, you know, this being a diplomatic tool, but one that, you know, people in various countries might not want?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a really interesting question. I mean, the Sinopharm vaccine that's been authorized by the WHO has, you know, actually pretty good numbers, pretty good efficacy numbers. The other vaccine, the Sinovac vaccine, that is yet to be authorized by the WHO, and that's actually the point I was going to make earlier, that has lower efficacy numbers, at least in some of the trials. And so that's a concern because, you know, as we've written about, seen countries like the Seychelles, that when these vaccines get distributed, there's a possibility that although maybe you're going to see a reduction in hospitalizations and deaths, because that's what these vaccines do, that's what they're tested for, right? But you might not be able to actually stop the spread of the virus in the community. So in other words, you don't get the same benefits out of it in terms of, like, feelings of public safety or people being able to take off their mask or just stopping the virus from spreading locally. So you might not be able to get out of the pandemic quite as quickly. That's if this data, you know, there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered. Like, for example, in the Seychelles, we don't know, you know, exactly. There could be other variants or something. It might not be the vaccine that's the issue.
The Seychelles, I think, is one that everyone's trying to understand for sure, since there's seems to be a lot of people who have had a vaccine there. But how many do we think have had the Chinese vaccine there, and how does that play into what's happening in the country?
And John, really quickly, 20 seconds, please.
I don't know exactly how that breaks out, but I think the WHO is actually starting to look at this issue very closely. And I think that they're going to be looking at the rates, the terms, the method of vaccination, et cetera.
We're still finding so much out as we go. John Lauerman, editor at Bloomberg in Boston. Joel Weber, editor of Bloomberg Businessweek in our interactive broker studio. Check out the remarks.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, stay in prison.
Just drive, baby.
Just drive me crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
Drive the rage, take a break. We can reach our destination.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
Just about 10 and a half minutes left in today's trading session. It has been quite a day, and I feel like there's been a couple of major themes today. Certainly cryptocurrencies, Tim, no doubt about that. Watching the equity trade and watching some selling pressure earlier on, we're off our lows of the day. And then you had the Fed minutes.
Yeah, the Fed minutes. Really, I think the big takeaway from those was, well, the timing of them and the fact that they came, that the meeting was actually before the CPI data that we got last week, and also the brutal jobs report for April. But there was concern that inflation, at least in the short term, could be pushed up by supply constraints.
And even maybe favoring some taper talk at upcoming meetings. And that was before, as you said, those surprising numbers. All right, let's get to it with Ernesto Ramos. He's Chief Investment Officer of the U.S. at BMO Global Asset Management. BMO Global Asset Management on the phone from Chicago. So, Ernesto, good to have you here with Tim and myself. On a day like today, what is it that you ultimately, if you had a major institutional investor talking to you and saying, what do I need to know about a day like today? What do you say to them?
Well,
because you can have your pick of major stories.
I think the inflation story is certainly something that we're paying a lot of attention to, because there's the yin and the yang. You get the strong inflation number. You see all of the things that are moving higher, like commodities and but then you also have the weak labor market numbers, and so. We're paying a lot of attention to inflation, because even at the grocery store level, at the clothing level, my wife is a great indicator, tells me that things are really moving higher and have been moving higher for the last few months. So we're paying a lot of close attention to inflation. But the real theme that it's important here is that stay focused on not overpaying for stocks. And right now, you saw the junk rally or the junkier part of the market that was the value market, airlines, hotels, and all of that go up very substantially. But now the market is shifting towards rewarding what I call quality value companies that are profitable, that have good business models, but that are trading at a significant discount. For example, an AutoZone, which trades at about 18 times earnings, but it's been profitable forever, has bought back 90% of their stock since 1999.
So is it a buyback play, or is it really fundamentals?
It's fundamental. Their growth is phenomenal. I mean, it's steady growth. It's not phenomenal growth as in they're growing 30% every year. But look at all the trends in the market. The used car market is going ballistic here. The prices of used cars are going higher, which means the demand is very strong. They obviously cater to that market. New cars are suffering from the semiconductor shortage, so there's not as many new cars. People want cars because they want to get back to driving after COVID, so they're going and buying used cars, and they're going to benefit from that. So all kinds of trends are in their favor, except they're not a sexy stock. They're not a thematic stock, and so people are not paying a lot of attention. But if you look at their chart, they're having a little weakness right now, but they have been moving higher pretty steadily.
So AutoZone, give me another example of one of these quality value stocks that sort of fits your definition.
Well, the financials, I mean, you look at a company like Citigroup, and now the financials are finally having their day.
in the sun, but I mean, Citigroup trading at less than 10 times earnings, JP Morgan, not as quite as cheap, but they're still doing great because in a higher inflation environment where the Fed is anchoring the low end of the curve down, their net interest margin with the steepness of the curve goes through the roof. They do very well. Economic activity picking up, that's also very favorable to them. And so they're in the right spot. And you name the financial, the big bank financial, and they're going to be fine. Waste Management is another company. It's not as cheap, but very steady, very good, high-quality, profitable company, just steadily going up. And so all these companies that are not in the sexy part of the market, the growth part of the market, the high-tech and whatnot part of the market, this is what we believe is the right time for them to take the lead in the market.
If I may jump in for a second, for how long do you do that trade? Because don't I want to ultimately, as an investor, be in the growth area of the market? If I believe with conviction that the growth area of the market is where the growth will be for years, even if it gets a little heady now, do I really care what happens over the next 6 to 12 months? What I really care is where we are 5 years from now.
Absolutely. And the question is, how much are you willing to pay for that growth? And there's nothing wrong with these, the Microsofts of the world, the Apples of the world. There's nothing absolutely wrong with them. Tesla, it's incredibly thematic. It's incredibly based on the personality of one man, and he's a genius undoubtedly, but it's priced beyond belief. So you want to own those tech companies, but right now they're priced too expensively for us. So there's a price for everything. And right now we think that a lot of those tech stocks are priced beyond what you would want to pay for them. So focus right now on what's underpriced. And this is quality is cheap right now, or what I call quality value. So focus on that right now. There will be a time after we have a more of a continued correction in technology where technology will become the right place to be. I'm not saying sell out of all of your technology, by the way. You want to have allocation to every corner of the market, but you want to be shifting money right now more to the quality value part of the market at the expense of the more expensive growth part of the market. I mean, I know you just kept Cathie Wood. The kinds of companies she owns, we think, are not poised to do so well for the next few months because of valuation mostly.
She's, of course, got her five-year time horizon for those companies, and that's an expectation that she sets, it seems like, very clearly every time we talk to her. Ernest, I want to go back to what you said about inflation, because that is like, over the last 2 weeks, this is something that we've been talking about a ton.
No, not at all.
Well, especially with the data that we got last week, I think it obviously really scared a lot of people. And I do wonder to what extent you think it, and I hate to use this term, but transitory. Is
jinx.
It
Personally, we don't think it's transitory. Mm. We're thinking that it's going to be stickier than that, because once you get pricing power, it's harder to go back. And as long as the demand is there, we don't see any slack in the demand. I mean, I think the jobs numbers was weak, but it was weak for good reasons. A lot of people are just not willing to go back to work for whatever reason, health concerns, or they're getting paid to stay home, but nicely. And I mean, you see it in Chicago where we live. There's a lot of people anecdotally that are looking for workers to come to their small businesses that are starting to reopen, and they can't find people to come and work at their little stores and little shops because whatever you want to call it, being paid to stay at home or health concerns or whatever, but there is a very tight labor market. So that's part of the story there. And so but we think the economy is in a very strong track right now. We're probably going to hit over 10% growth for the second quarter GDP growth. So we're on a strong track. Now, there are pockets of concern, but we have to be watchful.
All right, Ernesto, we're going to leave it on that note. Thanks so much for your time today. Ernesto Ramos, he's Chief Investment Officer of the U.S. at BMO Global Asset Management, on the phone from Chicago with us. So watching the markets, quite a day. Crypto was a story. The Fed minutes were a story. Retail was a story. It's really going to set us well for tomorrow's trade to see where we go. We are focusing, though, and getting near our highs of the day when it comes to the equity trade, Tim.
Yeah, we certainly are. Quite the difference that just a few hours makes. with a day like today.
Exactly. If you blink, you kind of miss something.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code Radio20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.